One of my favorite quotes from a labor organizer was, when you hear someone who's a management or a corporate leader say, "I have gotten everything I have out of hard work and labor," ask them whose. We have come too far, struggled too long, sacrificed too much and have too much left to do to allow that which we have achieved for the good of all to be swept away without a fight. And we have not forgotten how to fight. And that was said by Lane Kirkland. I think I shared in another sermon that I was raised on a picket line. But I did not share the whole story of my dad, and also the fact that I was born on March 13th, which is the day that Bread and Roses strike was in its highlight. So I kind of have a historic link to labor. My dad was born in 1910, and he was the oldest of six children in Hartford, Connecticut. And he sold pencils on the side of the street during the Depression to try to get the money together to go to college. He made it for 1 year at the University of Alabama, but then needed to go back to Hartford to take care of his five sisters. He opened a shop, which went out of business because my dad had this habit of giving people credit. And during the Depression, when you feed people that don't give you money, it's not very long before your store goes out of business. So he applied for a job at Pratt & Whitney Aircraft something. I think it wasn't called industry then. I don't remember exactly what the name of it was, in East Hartford, Connecticut. And while he was there, he noticed the poor working conditions, the low wages, and he started organizing Pratt & Whitney to be a union shop. And he was successful at organizing that union. But it cost him his job, because at that time there was no protection for workers who organized shops into union shops. So he was fired, and to this day, the name Paraslua is blackballed in the cities of Hartford and East Hartford. And when my brother, I think 35 years later, went to get a job at Pratt & Whitney, he was not allowed to be hired because of the blacklist due to my father. So my father started looking for other work, and he actually got a job with the International Association of Machinists. And I spent my life trying to explain to people what IAM was on our license plate. "You are what?" they always asked me. Well, International Association of Machinists. And he negotiated contracts for the East Coast, from Baltimore to the Canadian border and as far as the Mississippi River. So whenever my dad was traveling and I was not in school, I went with my dad, which is why I spent a lot of time in smoky offices coloring while my father argued with management about contracts, and standing on picket lines when the negotiations weren't successful and the unions went on strike. I was telling Eric that I think one of my first vocabulary words was scab. Does anybody not know what's... Okay. So what I respected most about my dad and what I find most significant now is that as a blue-collar worker, he provided a living wage for our family. My mother did not work outside of the home. We had a second home, a cottage at the beach. Now, we had to rent it out for most of the season, but we still had to vacation on the Long Island shore for about a month every summer. He took us on ski trips. We had a boat. We went water skiing. I lived a very solid middle-class life on the blue-collar wages of one parent. How many people can say that happens today? Do you know a blue-collar worker who has a second home, whose partner does not work? Do you know very many families at all, other than the 1%, where one person stays at home without severe sacrifices? This morning I listened on NPR as a woman talked about having to live on minimum wage. She actually works over 80 hours a week at three different jobs to provide for herself and her daughter. The conditions of the middle class in this country have deteriorated significantly since the 1970s. And I think that's probably the most important thing to us to reflect on. And I have a few statistics that I wanted to share with you that sort of reflect how that has happened. After World War II, 25% of the workforce was unionized, and that was about 14 million workers in the United States. And 10 million of them were being secured by union-negotiated agreements. In 2013, there were about the same number of union members in the United States, but compared to that 25%, they only represented 11% of the labor force. So over half of our labor force was no longer in unions. When the federal minimum wage was enacted in 1938, it was 25 cents. Now back then, you could adjust that for inflation and it would be the equivalent of about $4.19 in today's dollars. And then if you scroll that over the history of the minimum wage, which was steadily increased over years, it made its peak in 1968 under President Johnson. The minimum wage then, and I actually remember working for this, was $1.60. And that was the equivalent in today's dollars of $10.75. Now, the last increase in 2009 under President Obama brought the minimum wage to $7.25, which is the equivalent of $7.25 in today's dollars. So we've actually lost ground significantly. And who knows what that equivalent is today. At the same time, okay, in 1978, let's see, was it 78 or earlier? Let me look. Yeah. Between 1978 and 2013, during the time of that same minimum wage raising, corporate executives' wages went up 937%. Let me say that again. 937%. And minimum wage is the equivalent of what it was back in 1968. So, the important statistic about that is the CEO to workers compensation ratio. In 1965, the ratio of a CEO's salary to a worker's salary was 20-1. And that went up to 29-1 in 1978. Then it grew to 122-1 in 1995, and it peaked in 2000 as a ratio of 383-1. So CEOs were making almost 400 times as much as labor. It's part of our UU faith foundation to look at the relevance of our faith in the world, to make sure that our principles and our purposes, our worship services, our program effects are all relevant to people's lives, are relevant to what's going on in the world, and provide you the opportunity to grow, to learn, to aspire to a more balanced life, and a life that reflects the world around you. So one of the ways that we do that, and some of you may know the joke that how's it going? Let's see. How do you know a Unitarian? No. Let's see. Who knows about the Burning Cross one? I know what it is. What does the KKK and the Unitarian Universalists have in common? When a Unitarian Universalist comes to visit you, they burn a question mark on your lawn. That's the only thing that we have. So questioning is foundational. So the reason I'm sharing this information on Labor Day is to help you think over this weekend. Reflect. It's a Labor Day weekend. It's not just a long weekend holiday. There's a reason why we have Labor Day. It's to remember this history and where so many of workers' rights come from and the sacrifices that people made for us. And so think about what are the right questions today to ask about labor, about the movement. What about right-to-work states? There are now 28 states that have right-to-work legislation. That means that 28 states say you don't have to belong to the union if you're in a union shop, which decreases dues and decreases membership and weakens the union. Who does that serve? And why would people not want to be part of a union? Why would they not want to pay dues to a union? And what about the fact that people talk about unions, that they're the reason for the decreased economy? It's because corporations are not making enough money because of all those high union wages and those benefits that workers get. Well, what about the wages to the CEOs? Who's gone up disproportionately? So when people complain about unions or talk to you about labor's rights, think about those statistics. Think about our principles. Think about what it means to promote justice, to build community, to explore spirituality, and to practice love. Our mission here is relevant to everything in the society around us, as well as the programming and the relationships of this church. I like to think of my history as being very informative to how I live in the world, and that my dad's work has made me someone who's very conscious of those who are in minorities, of the underdogs, of those who are not served as well by the rules and the rights distributed in our society. And I would like to think that's foundational to me finding my way to a Unitarian Universalist faith. We learn, we grow. We mature in body and in spirit. And through that maturation, I hope that we improve the quality of our own lives and the quality of others' lives. That's foundational to this faith. I want to leave you with two quotes. If hard work were such a wonderful thing, surely the rich would have kept it all to themselves. That's from Lane Kirkland. And this from Mother Jones. The labor movement was not originated by human beings. The labor movement, my friends, was a command from God.